From Pacifica Network, this is Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention. War, Peace, and the Presidency. The Battle for New York.
1, 2, 3, 4.
We don't want your racist war.
5, 6, 7, 8.
We don't want your corporate state.
Nearly 1,000 people are arrested in a series of direct actions protesting the Republican convention.
They blocked buses full of delegates, they held a shut-up-a-thon at Fox News, and they marched without permits. All of this, and George W. Bush hasn't even arrived in New York yet.
We go from the streets of New York to Madison Square Garden, where the second night of the convention was headlined by Laura Bush and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Those critics who are so pessimistic about our economy, I say, don't be economic girly man.
We'll also speak with Republican delegates and take a look at Halliburton. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency. The Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman. In New York, nearly 1,000 people were arrested yesterday in widespread protests against the Republican National Convention. Some 1,500 people have now been arrested since protests against President Bush began 6 days ago. Near Ground Zero, police preemptively arrested about 200 people as they attempted to begin an unpermitted peaceful procession to Madison Square Garden. Yesterday afternoon, protesters gathered outside Fox News to conduct a shut-up-a-thon. Others rallied at the Sotheby's auction house to defend the legacy of Johnny Cash. Many more demonstrators conducted unpermitted but nonviolent direct action protests that crippled the area around Madison Square Garden and delayed some delegates from attending the convention. Protests continue today. A symbolic unemployment line is being formed to stretch from Wall Street to Madison Square Garden. United for Peace and Justice has called for a rally outside Pier 57, where many protesters are being held. The group is describing the holding cell as, quote, Guantanamo on the Hudson. Meanwhile, Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly has praised his officers, saying they've shown, quote, great restraint in the face of relentless provocation. Inside Madison Square Garden, the Austrian-born California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger called on fellow immigrants to support the Republican Party and George Bush. George Bush's daughters attempted to reach out to younger voters in a speech filled with jokes laced with pop culture references from Sex and the City to hip-hop group OutKast. And First Lady Laura Bush headlined the evening praising how her husband is waging the war on terror. In Israel, the death toll in yesterday's twin suicide bus bombings has risen to at least 14. Dozens were injured. Following the attack, Prime Minister General Ariel Sharon announced Israel would accelerate construction on a 400-mile separation wall being built in the West Bank. Sharon's office said, quote, we will build the fence where it provides the best protection, not where the world decides, he said. The United Nations and the International Criminal Court have both determined the wall to be illegal under international law. In Moscow, 10 people have died in a suicide bomb attack on a city subway station. Meanwhile, in southern Russia, gunmen have taken at least 400 hostages, including 200 students at a school. Iraqi National Congress leader Ahmed Chalabi has survived an attempt on his life while he was traveling in Iraq. Two bodyguards were wounded in the assassination attempt. In Baghdad, mortar fire hit the Green Zone, where Iraq's interim parliament was scheduled to hold its first meeting. The International Atomic Energy Agency is preparing to release a report that states UN inspectors have not uncovered definitive evidence that Iran has a secret nuclear weapons program. This, according to a report in the Washington Post based on interviews with diplomats who've seen the study. The Bush administration has claimed Iran is 3 to 5 years away from building a nuclear bomb. In June, the U.S. shared intelligence tips with the UN Atomic Agency but the intelligence did not lead to any discoveries. The Pentagon announced yesterday investigators have recommended bringing abuse-related charges against 26 soldiers for their involvement in the deaths of two detainees in Afghanistan in December 2002. The Washington Post reports the Justice Department will ask a federal judge in Detroit to dismiss convictions of three men in a high-profile terrorism case last year, in part because federal prosecutors failed to share potentially exculpatory evidence with the defense. And a new Zogby poll shows many New Yorkers still question whether the U.S. government knew in advance of the September 11th attacks. According to the poll, 49% of city residents said some leaders, quote, knew in advance that attacks were planned on or around September 11th, 2001, and that they consciously failed to act. The poll was commissioned by the group 911truth.org.
I was walking down the street in the town where I was born. I was moving to a beat that I never felt before. A silhouette opened up my eyes and I took a look around. I saw you written across the sky. The revolution starts now.
Steve Earle, the revolution starts now. Here on Democracy Now!, breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency, the battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman, here with Juan Gonzalez.
And good day to our listeners and viewers, and it's been quite a night here in New York City. More than 950 people were arrested yesterday as thousands of activists carried out a series of direct actions and civil disobedience at locations throughout New York City. The protests were organized by the A31 Action Coalition, a decentralized umbrella group made up of scores of activist organizations and affinity groups. Yesterday's arrest brought the number total during the Republican National Convention to over 1,500.
The groups participating in Tuesday's coordinated actions range from the War Resisters League to the Ruckus Society, Direct Action to Code Pink to the San Francisco-based group Stop the War. The protests targeted corporate media outlets, mega corporations, media, government buildings, Republican delegates celebrating the Bush administration as well as other sites. A few hours before the actions kicked off, some of the groups working with A31 Action Coalition held a news conference in front of the Gandhi statue at Union Square. Here is Washington, D.C. lawyer Shahid Buttar.
Throughout this week's coverage of the resistance to the Republican National Convention, there has been a consistent depiction of this movement of a broad swath of America as being organized by out-of-towners, lumped under the both over- and under-inclusive definition of anarchists. There could be nothing further from the truth. This is an uprising of the nonviolent variety by the people of New York and their allies across the country who found ourselves moved to come here and demonstrate our convictions. We think, both at the Ruckus Society, at which I'm a volunteer, And the vast, vast majority of the millions of individuals in the immense global movement for peace and justice, that violence is never either an appropriate or an effective means of achieving social change. Whether it's dropping bombs on foreign countries, whether it's funneling taxpayer money to corporate war profiteers by waging mercantilist invasions of foreign countries, or whether it's mob violence against law enforcement. There was an incident yesterday evening of which most of you may be aware. It was an unfortunate one. And among the situations in which we don't endorse violence are those in which law enforcement belligerently instigated, as did the police officer, unfortunately, last night. It is very regrettable what happened. We hope and we aspire, this is a hope that we place on the police department's shoulders, that it will not happen again. It lies within their power. We seek a better world. What we are here to do is seek a world that is more peaceful and more just, a safer world. Violence does not conduce that. It is not something we endorse, either within the movement broadly or within the Ruckus Society in particular. If I may speak about the Ruckus Society in particular, it has trained thousands of people in all of our communities, including its most oppressed, in the tactics and strategies employed by Gandhi and King. We train in a rich legacy of nonviolent resistance to injustice. Martin Luther King said that an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and we all feel that very deeply, or we would not be here taking the risks upon ourselves personally that we do. We are very proud of what we are here to do. We are very proud of what we were doing. The movement will not be intimidated, regardless of the tactics arrayed against us. As a press that purports to be independent, a fourth branch, a check, if you will, on the American government, we plead to you to represent us fairly and accurately. If there is anything we can do in that in questions and answers, I'm happy to get them.
Shahid Buttar, he's a Washington, D.C. lawyer, and he was one of those who spoke at the A31 Action Coalition, that's August 31st Action Coalition news conference that took place in Union Square yesterday about 1:30 in the afternoon. Today, we're going to take a comprehensive look at the series of protests that took place yesterday. As we heard today, some of the reports from other news networks talking about several hundred or hundreds of people protesting. We're talking about thousands of people throughout the city yesterday taking to the streets, freezing off whole areas near Madison Square Garden, and then the police moving in. We're joined by Eric LeCompte, outreach coordinator of School of the Americas Watch, engaged in one of the first actions yesterday, and Jeremy Scahill, producer and correspondent for Democracy Now! As we traveled through the day yesterday, Jeremy, give us a summary of what was taking place.
Well, this was really an incredible day of action. It was billed as the Shout Heard Around the World, and it was organized by the A31 Coalition, which was a loose group of a number of organizations who were suborganized into affinity groups that were going to be participating or carrying out direct actions and civil disobedience yesterday. The day kicked off actually on Wall Street. There was a protest to an attempt to shut down Wall Street. More than a dozen people were arrested there. And then a half a dozen people were followed by New York City police as they got onto a subway train at Union Square and made their way uptown. They got off at 125th and Martin Luther King in Harlem and were arrested by the police who had followed them onto the train. And they were arrested for this, for the very dangerous act of wearing bandanas or masks on their face. So that was how the day kicked off. No one really knew what was going to happen yesterday, including many of the people who were involved in the actions because of the decentralized nature of the A31 Action Coalition. People were divided into affinity groups that were going to carry out their own sub-actions around the city. And so it wasn't until people's phones started beeping and getting text messages that they actually knew some of the actions that were going on. There were three or four main areas of confrontation around the city as the day developed. One, which Eric will talk about, was at Ground Zero. Another was at Union Square and the area or blocks immediately surrounding Union Square. Another was near Madison Square Garden and the Herald Square area, Amy, where I know you spent a good deal of time yesterday. At Union Square, you had people from the Infernal Noise Brigade, who were, it's sort of a guerrilla marching band of sorts, who attempted to lead a march out of Union Square and make their way north in Manhattan. They did not make it far out of the park at all. One of the things that people were doing was trying to get out of the park by walking just in groups of two, because if you walk in groups of two on the sidewalk, sometimes you can make it past because technically the police will say that that's legal. And so as soon as someone even slightly veers off the path, the police then start to move in. They didn't make it more than a block on the east side of the park before the police started to move in. And they were using the tactics, law enforcement were using the tactics that we've seen throughout the week, and that is to immediately and quickly move in to divide the crowd. Sometimes they've used motorcycles or mopeds. Other times they've used bikes. Other times they've brought in riot cops who then bring in these big metal barriers. They divide up the march right in half. They then cordon off the street on both sides. Those people that are pushed to one side of it are told that they have to be up on the sidewalk or face arrest. Those people who are unfortunate enough to get stuck in the middle are generally arrested. And so the showdown that began in Union Square went on for hours and hours through the day. It began around 4 o'clock in the afternoon with hundreds of people amassing in Union Square, and then resulted in quite significant violence in the streets. We understand that there were a number of injuries, and there were more than 100 arrests in that Union Square area.
And even as that was happening up at Fox at around 48th and Avenue of the Americas, where Fox News is, across the street is the Gap, there was the Infernal Noise Brigade before they went down to Union Square, and soon a crowd that really grew to thousands outside of Fox News protesting.
But the police, there were a lot, even though the crowd was fairly large, blocking the sidewalks for the most part, because there were apparently so many cameras there and so many reporters, pretty much let the demonstration go on for quite a while.
Juan, did you see Fox covering this?
I'll tell you the truth, I don't watch Fox very often, Amy, so I couldn't tell.
I was just looking for some Fox cameras, but maybe they were pointing out from the News Corp building.
I was traveling around a lot yesterday with Rick Rowley of Big Noise Tactical Media, and we thought that we were the only people who were sort of always one step behind everything. We would arrive on a scene, and then the police would be arresting people, but then we saw a bunch of our colleagues from the Independent Media Center, and everyone was in the same thing. You know, you'd be standing there with a group of people trying to figure out where to go next, and then all of a sudden, everybody's phones would start beeping, and you'd get a text message. Police are amassing on 27th and 8th. Police are amassing.
Now, let's talk about that for a second. You'd get a text message. Talk about the whole text mob phenomenon.
Yeah, well, there's this website, Text Mob, which is TextMob.com. And there are, if you go onto that, there are a number of groups. It's like listservs on the when you use email. And so you sign up for alerts, and there are a number of them. The Independent Media Center has one. There's a Central Communications Dispatch one. There is riots at TextMob.com. And so, you know, depending on the groups that you sign up for, you get updates from those various groups. And, you know, some of them are more accurate than others. But, you know, in general, I've been really surprised at how on target these text messages are. And yesterday, the affinity groups would say, we are doing this right now. And then within moments, the text message would be sent out. And so you really can end up in a sort of game of cat and mouse chasing around the city. The police were in the same ballpark as journalists in terms of trying to figure out exactly where the action was.
I'm just going to my phone for a random hit from Text Mob. Message from, and it says, Text Mob, cop mass seemingly preparing to arrest civilians and protesters en masse, Herald Square, people refusing to disperse. That was yesterday at 7 o'clock. And right below that, A31 party heading to Broadway at 15th, headed north, doing fine, moving down from there. And we would get get these throughout the day. Then there's the one, congrats, the protesters. Talk about this one, Jeremy. Congrats, the protesters just disrupted MSNBC interview with Ben Stein at Herald Square Live. Couldn't continue.
Well, there were a number of confrontations of the media yesterday. One was the shut-up-a-thon at Fox News. The other was when the MSNBC broadcast, which was taking place outside, was disrupted in the Herald Square area. People staging a protest against the torture of prisoners at Abu Ghraib and the occupation of Iraq. People were actually able to disrupt the broadcast itself of MSNBC. And it was
because they
were there in the area where MSNBC had this outdoor studio set up, and so they were able to effectively disrupt that. And that was one of the most successful direct actions of the day in terms of getting a message out or a message across. The other thing about the text messaging is that the Independent Media Center, as well as legal observers, have used it to try to document what's going on in the streets. For instance, when the numbers started to wane a bit outside of Union Square. The Independent Media Center put out a call for more cameras to go there because the numbers had dropped off and they want to make sure that they're continuously monitoring the situation. So they put out a call saying, we need more cameras or we need photographers to come to such and such a block. And so then people knew to go there. Same thing with legal observers. Police have just used pepper spray on such and such a corner. We need legal observers to get there as soon as possible.
And of course, they're not the only ones with cameras because the police I've never seen so many cameras that the police are overtly using at every single protest. Sometimes we see one, we'll see two, we'll see three going along, and often on the back of their shirts it says TARU, T-A-R-U.
And that's only the handheld cameras. The ones that have already been pre-positioned all over the city are an amazing number. But we're also joined by Eric LeCompte, Outreach Coordinator for School of the Americas Watch. Talk to us about your experiences yesterday.
Well, we had quite a day yesterday. We did begin our direct action, our procession at Ground Zero. It was important for us to begin at Ground Zero to remember the terrible tragedy that took place on September 11th. And it was our sense at the School of the Americas Watch and War Resisters League to bring that memory to the Republican National Convention. So what we wanted to do was to have a solemn funeral procession that went from Ground Zero to the Republican National Convention. When we began our procession, we were about 3,000 strong at Ground Zero. About 200 people crossed the street, and as they crossed the street...
Eric, yes. We're going to hold it there, leaving our listeners and viewers in suspense just so we can break for 60 seconds, and then we'll come back and find out what happened to those 200 people who walked across the street at Ground Zero. This is Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, the Battle for New York. We'll be back in a minute.
In this backwards system where it seems that the end justifies the means, as the American dream mean material things when conquests and crusades, creation of colonies, and human slavery is still a current issue. Diamond mines, clothing lines, cocoa, and tennis shoes. No noise heard on the news for that, but every station all day they bomb in Iraq. All out attack, the whole world react. Hit the streets to stop their military acts. No killing the children, a bombing a building, a pillaging of villages, of religious civilians by the millions. Millions spent every day, the USA forcing their futures decay. Instead of educating the youth, they're making them troops to spill blood for the thugs who took office by coup.
A ver, lo que tú me cuentas es sospechoso.
Omaya here on Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, the Battle for New York. Almost 1,000 people arrested yesterday in mass direct action and civil disobediences around the city. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. We're joined by Democracy Now! Producer and correspondent Jeremy Scahill, who is out in the streets along with all the other Democracy Now! Producers documenting what was taking place from Union Square to Herald Square, which is near Macy's, just a block from Madison Square Garden, up at Fox headquarters at 48th, 49th, and 6th Avenue, where thousands protested the Fox Network, down to Ground Zero, also up in Harlem, the protests, some of the first protests beginning at Wall Street. We're joined also by Eric LeCompte of SOA, School of the Americas Watch. You said that 200 people left the crowd of several thousand and started to walk across the street. What was the goal?
At that point, the 3,000 people that we had gathered at Ground Zero were marching two by two. So the 200 that crossed the street were the group that was directly in front of the 3,000. Our plan was to walk on the sidewalk legally all the way until Madison Square Garden, where at that point, many people, a part of this group, would take to the streets and do a massive die-in, feigning massacres that have taken place from Colombia to Iraq, remembering that Ground Zero, the terrible tragedy that we remembered under Bush policy right now, is being perpetuated all over the world, that this is something that so many people can relate to. People in Iraq right now, as civilians are being killed by the war. In Colombia, as thousands are being killed every year because of training of Colombian soldiers by the School of the Americas. So we began our procession with this agenda on our mind. And as the first group crossed the street, leading the march of 3,000, the group was immediately split by the police. The group really didn't know what was happening. And before people could even leave, they were completely blocked in by orange fencing, by police, by several riot squads. So everyone was packed in very tightly to the sidewalk area. And soon they began arresting people. It was very strange. We hadn't expected this at all. People walking two by two on the sidewalk, not blocking access, to be penned up, corralled, and arrested right away. So as this happened, riot squads also started to form around the rest of the group of the several thousand who were also there walking two by two, very clearly a nonviolent group, a very focused group, a group that was walking in a solemn procession at Ground Zero itself. The people are all being still held. Over 200 were arrested. And after that happened, we needed to reorganize to continue the procession. The march route that we originally wanted to take to walk to Madison Square Garden was no longer possible because of the heavy police presence. But we reorganized two by two. It was clear that those people were being arrested at that point, and we continued on to Madison Square Garden. It was actually quite amazing, and I think it was because there were so many direct actions taking place over the city that the police were widely dispersed, and it was virtually impossible for them to track our procession as we continued. Through using text messaging and also getting reports, our group was able to find out where the large presences of police were. So we were able to avoid them and get all the way to Madison Square Garden, just a block away, where we did complete the die-in, where over 50 people took to the streets with the names of civilians who've been killed in Iraq, with the names of civilians who've been killed in Colombia, all part and parcel of the same Bush policy. They took to the streets, they did a massive die-in, and over the next few hours, up until 10 o'clock last night, over 50 people were arrested at that site. So in total, with the illegal arrest that the police did and the die-in that took place near Madison Square Garden to send the memory of Ground Zero, that the Bush administration is continuing to perpetuate Ground Zeros with its foreign policy all over the world, there were over 250 people arrested as a part of this action yesterday.
Just in one spot.
Yes.
And interestingly, the police department had sent out word to reporters actually around the city that your group was not going to make it to Madison Square Garden, that their intention was to stop it before it got there. Jeremy, I don't know, as you went around the city yesterday, whether you noticed, the arrests had nothing to do with whether protests were violent or not violent, whether they were disruptive or not disruptive. They had seemed more to do with Does the group have the potential to create problems near Madison Square Garden? And do we have the force in place to do mass arrests right away? It basically came down to those things rather than the character of the demonstrations at all.
Right, and I think, you know, this is a much bigger discussion, but I think that what we've really seen in a way here is the Seattle generation coming of age. I think that people have realized, many people have realized the value of tactical nonviolence. And so you don't see people trying to throw any garbage can through a Starbucks or anything like that. I mean, overwhelmingly, they have put lie to the idea that a bunch of anarchists were going to come to New York and burn the city. I mean, overwhelmingly, the people who have gathered here have conducted themselves in a peaceful, nonviolent manner. And that's probably disappointing to a lot of people that are inside of Madison Square Garden in the circle around Karl Rove, because I think you've seen a real sophistication of the tactics that are being used by the activists. I mean, yesterday was an impressive day of coordination.
And interestingly, the single incident of violence that has been gotten the most attention now is the one policeman who was injured the night before and just south of Madison Square Garden. And there was actually even pictures and a $5,000 reward issued last night, photos of the suspected assailant of the cop. But even there, the story of how that actually happened is a lot different from on the media, on the commercial media, from what we know of, right?
That's right. And also, I mean, if we're talking about the same incident, I mean, this was a police officer who was not clearly identified as a police officer, is my understanding. I mean, I thought a couple of times when these guys came up on motorcycles, I initially thought it was like a biker gang attacking people.
And I will say that the A31 News conference, because Jeremy, Juan, we were all at that site right by Madison Square Garden the night before, right after this had happened. But at the news conference yesterday, they began the news conference by saying that they decried violence, that they were here in nonviolence, and they addressed the issue of what happened to a police officer who moved in on a motorcycle. He said some people had gotten injured there, and that the nature of this movement, its strength is that it is very decentralized, and that the umbrella of groups that are here protesting for peace are peaceful.
Overwhelmingly. And you have, I mean, the police officers who are riding around on these motorcycles, many of them are dressed in New York Yankees uniforms. I don't know if you noticed that, but they're dressed in New York Yankees uniforms going around the city.
And jerseys, yeah.
Tremendous number of undercover police officers or plainclothes police officers. And they've been putting out on some of the activist websites the color of the armband that the undercover cops are wearing for the day. Yesterday, the color was yellow that they were wearing so that they can identify themselves as undercover police officers.
Well, we'll continue on the protest beat, but as all of this was going on outside, all over the city, it was amazing listening to a delegate on another news network saying that she was not aware of any protest. The entire Herald Square was frozen. Thousands of people at every corner. Riot police almost looked like the same number. The entire area, I don't know how many delegates came through, infuriated, frustrated, because they couldn't pass, because people were shouting no, no to war, no to the Bush agenda. But inside the convention, it did take place.
Yes, inside the heavily fortified Madison Square Garden, the Republican Party formally nominated George W. Bush for a second term last night. The second day of the convention featured a revival of President Bush's 2000 campaign theme of compassionate conservatism. Headlining the evening were California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and First Lady Laura Bush.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was born in Austria. He was a bodybuilder, became governor of California in the state's first recall election last year. On the first night that the major broadcast networks carried live coverage of the convention proceedings, Governor Schwarzenegger took the stage to make his national political debut.
To my fellow immigrants listening tonight, I want you to know how welcome you are in this party. We Republicans admire your ambition. We encourage your dreams. We believe in your future. And one thing I learned about America is that if you work hard and if you play by the rules, this country is truly open to you. You can achieve anything. everything I have, my career, my success, my family, I owe to America. In this country, it doesn't make any difference where you were born. It doesn't make any difference who your parents were. It doesn't make any difference if you're like me and couldn't even speak English until you were in your 20s. America gave me opportunities and my immigrant dreams came true. I want other people to get the same chance as I did, the same opportunities, and I believe they can. That's why I believe in this country, that's why I believe in this party, and that's why I believe in this president. Now, many of you out there tonight are Republican like me, in your hearts and in your belief. Maybe you're from Guatemala. Maybe you're from the Philippines. Maybe you're from Europe or the Ivory Coast. Maybe you live in Ohio, Pennsylvania, or New Mexico. And maybe, just maybe, you don't agree with this party on every single issue. I say to you tonight that I believe that's not only okay, but that's what's great about this country. Here we can respectfully disagree and still be patriotic, still be American, and still be good Republicans. My fellow immigrants, my fellow Americans, how do you know if you're a Republican? Well, I tell you how. If you believe that government should be accountable to the people, not the people to the government, then you are a Republican. If you believe that a person should be treated as an individual, not as a member of an interest group, then you are a Republican. If you believe that your family knows how to spend your money better than the government does, then you are a Republican. If you believe that our educational system should be held accountable for the progress of our children, then you are a Republican. If you believe that this country, not the United Nations, is best hope for democracy, then you are a Republican. And ladies and gentlemen, if you believe that we must be fierce and relentless and terminate terrorism, then you are a Republican. Now, there's another way you can tell you're a Republican. Your faith in free enterprise, faith in the resourcefulness of the American people, and faith in the U.S. economy. And to those critics who are so pessimistic about our economy, I say, don't be economic girly man.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger addressing the Republican National Convention last night in Madison Square Garden. During his address, peace activist and Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin was on the floor of the convention. She was standing less than 20 feet from Vice President Dick Cheney. She unfurled a pink banner that read, "Pro-life, stop the killing in Iraq." Security officials quickly approached her, told her to put it away. Medea responded by saying it was a pro-life banner. Soon, Secret Service came up and asked her for her credentials. She stalled for a few minutes, cheering Schwarzenegger along with the Republican crowd. She was soon surrounded by security. As she realized she was being taken away, Medea Benjamin started to shout at Vice President Dick Cheney, seated with his wife and Rudolph Giuliani and his wife just feet away.
Okay, come on.
Stop the killing in Iraq! Mr. Cheney! Stop the killing in Iraq! Mr. Cheney! How much money did you make on the war? Mr. Cheney!
Yeah, we're going to need you to come on the phone. We're going towards the stairs. We're bringing it downstairs.
Stop the killing in Iraq!
Don't go down the stairs. Go down the stairs.
Stop the killing in Iraq!
You understand that?
Stop the killing in Iraq!
Peace activist Medea Benjamin being carried off the convention floor last night as California Governor Schwarzenegger was speaking at the podium. She was carried down a set of stairs head first as she held her banner over her body. The other headline Republican speaker was First Lady Laura Bush. When we come back from our break, we'll hear what she and her daughters had to say.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back, and why does my appearance seem to have a somber tone? Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time. I wear the black for those who've never read or listened to the words that Jesus said about the road to happiness through love and charity. Why, you think he's talking straight to you and me? Well, we're doing...
This is Democracy Now!, the war and, well, usually the War and Peace Report. Now, breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency, the battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Juan, I must say that after Medea Benjamin was taken off the floor shouting, stop the killing in Iraq, and asking Vice President Dick Cheney how much money he made on the war today, they, in to say the least, increased the security in the area and made it very difficult for anyone with cameras to actually record Dick Cheney and his entourage in the seats. Also today at 9:45 this morning, there will be protest at Pier 57, which is where hundreds of protesters are being held. Yesterday, a news conference with Norman Siegel, we had him on yesterday, talking about the concern of asbestos in the building where they're being held.
Yes, and before the First Lady Laura Bush took the stage for her speech last night, her 22-year-old twin daughters, Barbara and Jenna, made their national television debut at the convention. They had the job of introducing their father, President Bush, who appeared via closed circuit from a campaign stop in Pennsylvania. This is an excerpt of Barbara and Jenna Bush last night.
It's great to be here. We love Arnold. Isn't he awesome? Thanks to him, Manhattan, if one of us ever decides to marry a Democrat, nobody can complain. Except maybe our grandmother Barbara. And if she doesn't like it, we would definitely hear about it. We already know she doesn't like some of our clothes, or music, or most of the TV shows we watch. Danny, we love you dearly, but you're just not very hip. She thinks Sex and the City is something married people do, but never talk about. We spent the last 4 years trying to stay out of the spotlight. Sometimes we did a little better job than others. We kept trying to explain to my dad that when we were young and irresponsible, well, we were young and irresponsible.
Jenna and I are really not very political, but we love our dad too much to stand back and watch from the sidelines. We... We realized that this would be his last campaign, and we wanted to be a part of it. Besides, since we've graduated from college, we're looking around for something to do for the next few years. Kind of like Dad.
Our parents have always encouraged us to be independent and dream big. We spent a lot of time at the White House, so when we showed up the first day, we thought we had it all figured out. But apparently my dad already has a chief of staff named Andy.
When your dad's a Republican and you go to Yale, you learn to stand up for yourself. I knew I wasn't quite ready to be president, but number two sounded pretty good. Who is this man they call Dick Cheney?
I think I know a lot about campaigns. After all, and my grandfather and my dad have both run for president. So I put myself in charge of strategy. Then I got an angry call from some guy named Carl.
We knew we had something to offer. I mean, we've traveled the world, we've studied abroad. But when we started coming home with foreign policy advice, Dad made us call Condi.
Not to be deterred, we thought surely there's a place for strong-willed, opinionated women in communications. And next thing we know, Karen's back. We decided the best thing we could do here tonight would be to introduce somebody we know and love. You know all those times when you're growing up and your parents embarrassed you? Well, this is payback time on live TV.
Take this. I know it's hard to believe, but our parents' favorite term of endearment for each other is actually bushy. And we had a hamster, too. Let's just say ours didn't make it.
But contrary to what you might read in the papers, our parents are actually pretty cool. They do know the difference between mono and bono. When we tell them we're going to see Outkast, they know it's a band and not a bunch of misfits. And if we really beg them, they'll even shake it like a Polaroid picture.
So, okay, maybe they have learned a little pop culture from us, but we've learned a lot more from them. About what matters in life, about unconditional love, about focus and discipline. They taught us the importance of a good sense of humor, of being open-minded and treating everyone with respect. And we learned the true value of honesty and integrity.
When you grow up as the daughters of George and Laura Bush, you develop a special appreciation for how blessed we are to live in this great country. We are so proud to be here tonight to introduce someone who read us bedtime stories, picked up carpool, made us our favorite peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and cheered for us when we scored a goal, even when it was for the wrong team.
Yes, Barbara and Jenna Bush making their national television debut at the Republican National Convention last night in New York. Their plans for September 11th? Well, according to some reports, they'll be at their beautician's wedding. He's been with his partner for many years, though the twins' spokesperson has not confirmed or refused to confirm or deny that they would be at the wedding of a gay couple. Their father, George Bush, arrives in the city today and plans to meet with a group of firefighters and supporters in Queens. The last speaker of the night was First Lady Laura Bush. An excerpt here of what she had to say.
No American president ever wants to go to war. Abraham Lincoln didn't want to go to war, but he knew saving the Union required it. Franklin Roosevelt didn't want to go to war. But he knew defeating tyranny demanded it. And my husband didn't want to go to war, but he knew the safety and security of America and the world depended on it. I remember some very quiet nights at the dinner table. George was weighing grim scenarios and ominous intelligence about potentially even more devastating attacks. I listened many nights as George talked with foreign leaders on the phone or in our living room or at our ranch in Crawford. I remember an intense weekend at Camp David. George and Prime Minister Tony Blair were discussing the threat from Saddam Hussein. And I remember sitting in the window of the White House, watching as my husband walked on the lawn below. I knew he was wrestling with these agonizing decisions that would have such profound consequence for so many lives and for the future of our world. And I was there when my husband had to decide. Once again, as in our parents' generation, America had to make the tough choices, the hard decisions, and lead the world toward greater security and freedom. I wasn't born when my father went to World War II. Like so many of our greatest generation, he's now gone. Lost to Alzheimer's 9 years ago. He served in the United States Army in Europe for almost 3 years and helped liberate Nordhausen, one of the concentration camps. You can imagine his horror at what he found there. The methods of the terrorists we face today are different, but my father would know this struggle. Our parents' generation confronted tyranny and liberated millions. As we do the hard work of confronting today's threat, we can also be proud that 50 million more men, women, and children live in freedom thanks to the United States of America and our allies.
First Lady Laura Bush addressing the Republican National Convention in Madison Square Garden on Tuesday night.
Finally, we turn to a story about the legendary singer Johnny Cash. Cash was one of the nation's most successful country singers for the last half century. He died last September at the age of 71. Yesterday, the Tennessee delegation to the Republican National Convention sparked yet another protest by hosting an exclusive celebration of Johnny Cash at the Sotheby's Auction House. Democracy Now! Producer John Hamilton filed this report.
My name is Karen Rose. I'm a New Yorker. I'm standing here on 71st and York Avenue in front of Sotheby's, who usually sell antique lamps and Ming vases. And today they are hosting the Republicans at an exhibit of Johnny Cash memorabilia and trying to link the two of them together. And we are here because they are trying to do that, and they are trying to take our city and our park and everything else away from us and making us ask permission to cross the street, and we're not standing for it anymore.
This is Jello Biafra reporting from outside the infamous auction house, Sotheby's, where the Man in Black block has converged upon the Tennessee Republican delegation, who has gone for a private viewing of items from the estate of the late Johnny Cash. As Steve Earle would put it, Johnny would be rolling in his grave.
Hello, my name is Kevin Schlottman, and I'm here at Sotheby's. Johnny Cash doesn't really belong to any one group or any one person. He belongs to everyone. I would say, especially not the Republicans, because he is a man for the working people. He was a labor man, sang some mining songs, sang some blues songs, and he wore black in solidarity for the poor and the oppressed. So we just like to let the RNC delegates know that we're out here, and that's what he stands for, and that's what we believe he stands for.
What would Johnny Cash think of Bush's illegal war in Iraq, let alone what he does to people of lesser means in the South and the rest of the United States? What would Johnny Cash think of mountaintop removal, for example, where the coal companies blow the whole top off of mountains in Appalachia, and if all the debris lands in the valley and buries people's homes and buries streams, they don't care. Why do they do it? Because they can. So people are here to take back the spirit of Johnny Cash, or at least subject these Republican fat cat scam artists to a little bit of the old spirit that goes back through Johnny Cash, or as one of my friends in the Melvins put it, when Johnny Cash died, he looked off wistfully and said, he was our Abe Lincoln, in a way. And so the people inside and the people at Sotheby's, they're going to sell Johnny's effects to rich people who want to buy a piece of Johnny Cash. And I guess the message from the protesters here is you cannot buy a piece of everybody, let alone have everybody lie down while you wreck the country with a Patriot Act and go off to illegal bloodbaths in the Middle East, which accomplish nothing except creating more terrorists.
Call him drunken out of haze, he won't answer anymore.
Get out of our city. We hate you. Don't pretend for one second that we like you here. Anybody who does act like they like you is probably making some money or needs to pay their rent. We hate you. Go home, and I will never forgive you for what you did to our city this week.
I walk the line. And these Republicans, they keep me rolling in my grave.
That last singer, Dan Byrne, outside Sotheby's Elite Auction House, where the protest took place, as the Tennessee Republican delegates celebrated Johnny Cash on Democracy Now! On Friday, Steve Earle said that Johnny Cash would be rolling in his grave. And that does it for this hour. I'll be in Asheville, North Carolina, on the Exception to the Rulers Tour, Friday night, Saturday night, Harrisonburg, Virginia. Amazing crew. Mike Burke, Shroof Abdelkaddous, Anna Nagar, Elizabeth Press, Jeremy Scahill, John Hamilton. Special thanks to Lee Burek Dan Nelgeiser, and Alpa Patel, and so many others at the Indy Media Center who helped make this possible. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.